We closed on the fifth in the 15th chapter. We did discuss verse 8 quite a bit, but I want to go back to the 15th chapter and just ask, were there any comments or questions on Revelation chapter 15 on that? I'll let you think a little bit. I'll talk for a moment on verse 8, Revelation 15, 8. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power, and no man was able to enter into the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were fulfilled. And so as discussed, the seven angels represent the seven messages that had previously been given through the gospel age, and that the seven last plagues were contained in those messages. They were their hard truths. The friends were emphasizing last week that we learned in Revelation 14, their undiluted truths, and that these will, in a way which only God can arrange, will be poured out or forced upon Babylon the Great, and will lead to the destruction of the nominal systems and the burning of the bundled tares. All these millions of Christians who think they're automatically going to heaven, while all the others aren't, will come to realize that they were never really in a true relationship with God, having been deceived. That church attendance was all you needed to get to heaven. So, leaving that there, that's the point. In verse 8, the temple, as we've been discussing, represents the divine plan of God. He dwells in his plan. He created his plan. We understand God by understanding his divine plan of the ages. So that's the temple. It was filled with smoke from the glory of God. And the references were brought out last week that when Moses had the tabernacle constructed and finished, the glory of God filled the tabernacle so that the priests could not enter in to serve. It was showing God's approval, as it were, or acceptance of that arrangement. And when the temple Solomon built was finished, likewise, the glory of God as a smoke filled the temple so that the priests could not enter into service. And in the future, Ezekiel's temple, both in the sense of it being literal as well as symbolic, once that temple is completed, the glory of God filled it as well. And the thought is that here, this is in harmony with that, that this shows that no man could enter in. And the man would represent both the priests, that is the 144,001, and a typical priesthood, they couldn't enter in, nor could mankind, humanity, be serviced in the temple arrangement, as it were, in the divine plan of God. This represents the mediatorial phase of the kingdom. When the smoke clears, excuse me, when the smoke clears, when the priests, the antitypical priesthood, and when the world of mankind, starting with restored Israel, can begin the work of mediation between God and mankind through the great mediator, the Christ, represented by the priesthood, that's when they'll be able to begin that good work. However, the seven last plagues have to do the work of preparing men's hearts in order to receive the blessings of the mediatorial phase of the kingdom. The erroneous church systems and all will have to be removed in order for people to then receive the true kingdom arrangement when it comes into being. So, in a nutshell, that's what we think verse 8 is presenting. But we'll take other comments here. Sister Debbie.
I just had a question. verse 7, it says that one of the four beasts gave unto the seven angels. And I'm assuming, I always assumed that the beast that did that would be justice. But then when you read verse 8, and the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power. So now I'm wondering, is that one of the four beasts actually God's power and not justice? Over.
Yeah, well, that's a reasonable question, and I don't think you could go wrong either way. I've favored thinking it's justice, because the and like I say, you can't go wrong either way. But back in verse 3 and 4, the emphasis of the song that the feet members of the 144,000 sing is just and true are the ways of God Almighty, King of the ages. And in verse 4, for all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy judgments are, or righteous dealings are made manifest. So I just put the emphasis on justice. But power is certainly true. It would be every bit as reasonable. Any other comments on that question or on anything in the 15th chapter? Okay. So we had sent out an email with notes on Revelation 16 while we were traveling. You'll notice at the top I put unedited, which is true. Same with the 15th notes. They certainly need some work, but since we put them together and sent them out while we were traveling, we didn't have more time to treat it. So it will be coming in the future, corrected, edited. Now let's start our Revelation 16. And we're going to read the entire 21 verses just to, as an overall. And, Sister Roseanne, could you read verses 1 through 5? Brother Jeff, could you read verses 6 through 10? Sister Connie, 11 through 15. And Sister Marilee, 17 through the end, please.
16:1-5. Then I heard a loud voice from the temple saying to the seven angels, go and pour out the bowls of the wrath of God on the earth. So the first went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, and a foul and loathsome sore came upon the men who had the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. Then the second angel poured out his bowl on the sea, and it became blood as of a dead man, and every living creature in the sea died. Then the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters saying, you are righteous, O Lord, the one who is and who was, because you have judged these things.
For they have shed the blood of your holy people and your prophets, and you have given them blood to drink as they deserve. And I heard the altar respond, yes, Lord God Almighty, true and just are your judgments. The fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and the sun was allowed to scorch people with fire. They were seared by the intense heat, and they cursed the name of God, who had control over these plagues, but they refused to repent and glorify him. The fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom was plunged into darkness. People gnawed their tongues in agony.
And they blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and they repented not of their works. And the sixth poured out his bowl upon the great river, the river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way might be made ready for the kings that come from the sun rising. And I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits, as it were frogs, for they are spirits of demons, working signs which go forth unto the kings of the whole world to gather them together unto the war of the great day of God the Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame.
And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. And the seventh angel poured out his vial unto the air, and there came a great voice from out of the temple of heaven, saying, It is done. And there were voices and the thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake such as never was since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and the great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceedingly great.
All right, very good. Several opening comments as we begin this study. The one is that with these seven plagues, last plagues being poured out, as mentioned earlier, because it says they're the seven last plagues which fill up the wrath of God, in other words, they complete or they are the fullness of his wrath, the intention is that they are now these plaguing truths that have been trumpeted forth before by the trumpeters, the messengers throughout the gospel age. The trumpet message will now be forced upon the nominal system by the Lord's direction. There is a relationship that helps us to understand this. Each plague is poured out on something, for example. So in Revelation 16, verse 2, the first plague is poured out upon the earth. Verse 3, second angel poured out his bowl upon the sea. Verse 4, third angel poured out his bowl upon the rivers and fountains of waters. Verse 8, the fourth angel poured out his bowl upon the sun. Verse 10, fifth angel poured out his bowl upon the seat of the beast, kingdom full of darkness. Verse 12, sixth angel poured out his bowl upon the great river Euphrates. And lastly, verse 17, the seventh poured out his bowl upon the air. King James says into, but upon the air is better. And there came a great voice out of the temple saying, it is done. So these symbols we have seen before. Does anyone remember where we've seen these, what I was just reiterating before? Anything come to mind on that? We saw it in the seven trumpets. And we are going to take the time to look at that now, because this is an important element, I think, in our overall understanding. So when we look at the seven trumpets, it's back to Revelation verse 8. Revelation verse 8. Revelation chapter 8. Sorry. Chapter 8. So in verse 6, the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded and followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were, here's the point, cast upon the earth. So the first trumpet affected the earth, we're told, and in our last plagues, the first plague was poured upon the earth. We just see a relationship. Chapter 8, verse 8, the second angel trumpeted, a great burning fire, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And our second plague was poured upon the sea. Revelation 8:10, the third angel trumpeted, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, fell upon the third part of the rivers and fountains of water. Our third plague is poured upon the rivers and fountains of water. Revelation 8:12, the fourth angel trumpeted, and the third part of the sun was smitten. Third part of the sun was smitten, and our fourth plague is poured upon the sun. Revelation 9:1, the fifth angel trumpeted, I saw a star fall from heaven onto the earth, giving him key to the bottomless pit. And our fifth plague is poured upon the seat of the beast, and the kingdom was full of darkness. So it's interesting that I've not made a better connection here for myself, except that I'll read chapter 9, 1 and 2. The fifth angel trumpeted, I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit, and he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. So reading that and then looking at Revelation 16, verse 10, this is connecting the fifth plague and the fifth trumpet. I'll read verse 10, 16:10. And the fifth angel poured out his bowl upon the seat or the throne of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness. And they gnawed their tongues for pain and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and repented not. There might be the darkness, might be the relationship here. And if someone sees something more, we're happy to entertain that. But we'll go through the, finish off our list here. Revelation 9 and verse 9:13. The sixth angel trumpeted, and I heard a voice from the horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And in our sixth plague, the sixth angel poured out his bowl upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up. And then lastly, in our seventh trumpet, that's Revelation 11 and verse 11:15, the seventh angel trumpeted, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdom of the world are become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. So the seventh trumpet is a unique trumpet message because, it's poured out in the air and it is a time of the transition into the true kingdom as a process. And in our Revelation 16, verse 17, and the seventh poured out his bowl upon the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple saying, it is done. So the relationship seems to be the great voice. And maybe there's something more. I certainly wouldn't argue with that. But nonetheless, I think there's enough here to help us recognize that as we were been presenting and we've been studying, the seven last plagues are the undiluted, destroying truths that have been previously trumpeted, but not undiluted, as the friends brought out. So that the same message during the gospel age that the Lord had put forth had its effect at the time it was intended. It was intended to expose error and gather the Lord's true people and encourage them with the message of truth. But after the seven trumpet messages have done their work of separating and gathering the Lord's faithful, then the seven last plagues, as it were, the undiluted truths from those trumpet messages will be poured, forced upon the nominal systems for their destruction and the burning of the bundled tares. So there's a point I like to make here, and I'll open it up for comments. The point I'd like to make here is that Brother Russell, his work was not to destroy Babylon. His work was not to destroy the nominal systems. His work was the harvesting of the final members of the body of Christ. His was a harvest work of gathering the wheat and of binding into bundles the tares to be burned after the wheat had all been safely gathered. So that's what the seventh messenger did. He destroyed errors. That's true. He exposed errors. He exposed the falsehood of clergy laity. That's all true. He was the greatest trumpeter because he had the complete harvest, the complete divine plan of the ages. However, the nominal systems are still here. There are still tares being made every day around the world. People still think they're going to heaven just by attending church, for example. So the mass is still being celebrated. The abomination to make it desolate is still being enforced today. And so our emphasis is that the Brother Russell did his work exactly as he was supposed to. And it'll be the truths of all seven trumpets, the plaguing truths, as seven last plagues will lead to the utter destruction of the nominal systems. Even that expression, and I know brethren interpret it in a variety of ways, and it is prophetic, but nonetheless, Revelation 18:4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins and that you receive not of her plagues. So that was really the essence. Well, not the essence. That was a big part of Brother Russell's message as this harvesting work was to grant the time, to allow people to have present truth, to recognize that they were to come out of the nominal systems. Create ecclesias as at the first advent, the way the early church fashioned itself, to free themselves from clergy laity, to recognize they have a personal responsibility in our relationship to God. It's not membership. Even doing ecclesia will make thee worthy of the 144,000. So that was Brother Russell's work. And as we saw in Revelation 14, that dry harvest was completed. Then the message came out of the temple to thrust in the sickle again, but this time to gather the divine of the earth and cast it into the winepress to be trampled out. So we saw the two processes. Now, that's not to say Brother Russell's his writings and his work didn't plague the nominals. It did. All seven trumpets were a plague when they went forth. Martin Luther was a plague. He plagued Catholicism. John Wycliffe was a plague. He plagued Catholicism. But these were for Reformation work. It wasn't the time of harvest. Let them both grow together to the time of harvest, the master said. But when Brother Russell the seventh messenger, when our Lord returned, it was the time of harvest. The Lord returns as the chief reaper. So now the message is don't reform the systems, come out of them so that you don't partake of her sins, because now you have the light of increased truth. Because if you stay in, after you recognize these errors, even if this is the most simple recognition, you're responsible. You will receive of those plagues. Okay, so that's really what we wanted to say on all of that. Sometimes brethren have, you know, they have the impression that if we say these seven last plagues are still future, they think that we're saying that the Brother Russell's ministry was of none effect. And that's certainly far, far from what any of us believe or think. But yet we still have the nominal systems here. And Brother Russell himself wrote in 1916 forwards, the very month in which he went to his reward, that he thought after World War I, the churches and the powers of the civil powers would get together once again for a brief period of authority before their final destruction. He says that. So we think we're really just following what he saw in the scriptures. And now 100 years later, we can see that, that things have progressed properly, but yet there is still a future destruction. So, okay. I'll take a breath, open it up for comments or questions or different thoughts on this so far. Ruth or Marilee, and then Brother Adi.
Yeah, just part of the discussion. Didn't you read to me this morning that the arm of St. Jude is going on tour? That they're going to have a worldwide tour of the arm of St. Jude, and it shows the power, the amount of interest there would be in such a thing. Now, this has something that has to be judged. It's not something that's just going to fade away. Over.
Yes, that's true. I just read on my AL News, as Ruth is referring to, that the Catholic Church is allowing the arm, the literal arm of St. Jude, a relic, to go on tour to the United States for the first time. So there must be, they must feel that there's enough Roman Catholics in the United States interested in this relic of the arm of St. Jude to go and, to have it go on tour. So yes, relic worship sadly is still alive and well. Brother, Adi, then Sister Carrie.
Just a comment that the trumpets can be heard but ignored. Whereas when you get a bowl that's poured, you can't ignore it. It's going to have its effect.
Yes, exactly. Excellent. For sure. Very good. Sister Carrie.
Could you review for me the seven messengers? I think I have the list, but I might be off one or two here. Paul, oh. John, Arius, Wycliffe, Luther, Russell. I'm not wondering if Peter, or, and I know there's different opinions out there, but I'm not really concerned about that. But. Over.
Who did you rattle off? You did pretty good.
Peter, Paul, John, Arius, Wycliffe, Luther, Russell. But I wasn't sure if Peter is. I don't know if I'm missing one. Over.
Well, you are ending up with seven, but instead of Peter, which is good. That's reasonable. The majority of the brethren start with Paul and go to John, Arius, and then Peter Waldo, the French merchant who paid to have portions of the gospel translated into French and written and distributed, and rejected much of the papal claims, and it generally led to the development of the heretic group known as the Waldensians, the Waldenses. And they were grievously persecuted. So that would be our fourth messenger, our fourth trumpeter. Then Luther and the, sorry, then, sorry, the fifth, John Wycliffe, and then Martin Luther, and then Brother Russell. That would be the seven that are generally accepted. Now we're not going to do it today, but just as kind of stirring up the memories, back when we studied through those periods of the church, you may remember that we were able to find in the Revelation scriptures different timing suggestions that helped us to scripturally time-wise link most of these messengers, and it helped gave us a sense of satisfaction, if you will, of being assured that we had the right messengers based on those time periods. And I think we could lock in Peter Waldo, Wycliffe, Luther, and Brother Russell. And we were doing that in their in those messages. So if that's of interest, it's back, it's in those notes, and so okay. Brother Mark.
Thank you, Brother Rick. So we're just obviously the seven messengers have done their work, but are we linking these seven angels and the pouring out to that work, like continuing, or I guess I'm having like a little confusion as to why we're talking about the seven messengers right now. Let's leave it at that for now.
Okay. No, that's very good. Sister Debbie, is your comment on that question?
Yes, sir. I just, I wanted to agree with Brother Mark because I was getting the same issue that you were maybe relating the two, but maybe not in time. I don't know, but they're almost the same, you know, the first is the earth and the water, and I'm just agreeing with Brother Mark.
Okay, so good. No, we appreciate that. Brother Mark, back to you.
Yeah, sorry. Because obviously what we're living in very, for lack of a better word, like potentially catastrophic times here with all these things kind of merging together finally. Like Sister Gina was just asking me about, isn't Satan supposed to be bound 1,000 years? And I said, well, that's part of the process still going on right now. He obviously isn't completely bound. And yet we got the work of these, seven plagues future still. And I'm seeing that because obviously, things are getting worse, although not being able to live like for over 100 years and being able to compare what it was like back then and now. It just seems like things are getting worse right now. And I appreciate all the discussion here and trying to understand it. It's just, maybe I'm trying to have it like an accountant would in the debit or the credit side. And maybe you just can't do that right now. And I need to be more patient. So anyways, hopefully that didn't confuse everybody more.
No, it's good thoughts. So let's just, we learned in, chapters 15 and 16 and in these two chapters, but back in 15, when we talked about it, there are seven angels, verse 15:1. There's seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them is filled up or completed the wrath of God. So we have two things, seven angels and seven last plagues. We're presenting the thought that the seven last plagues have been part of the seven messages that have gone out during the gospel age. They had these truths, these plaguing truths, but it wasn't the time for the plaguing truths to be forced on the systems to destroy them, because the Lord was still gathering the 144,000 throughout the gospel age. So the seven trumpets that were blasted, those messages of truth, went out, and as brought out, they could be ignored and were largely ignored by the nominal systems. Even Brother Russell's trumpet message has been largely ignored by the nominal systems. However, contained in those messages, because they were true, by and large, not completely, but in them were plaguing truths that in the future, when the 144,000 are all found, the Lord can then, and he desires to destroy the nominal systems, to get them out of the way in order to restore mankind. So the linkage we just did between looking at the seven trumpets and the seven last plagues was to demonstrate, as it were, that Brother Adi made the good comment, very to the point, the trumpets could be ignored by the nominal systems, but the seven last plagues cannot be ignored. It will lead to their destruction. So linking the first trumpet to the earth and the first plague to the earth, to my mind, is just demonstrating that God allowed the trumpets to be ignored if someone chose to do that. He allowed it because he knew he would use the same truth with the seven last plagues poured out, as it were, on the nominal systems to destroy it. So it's like his way of saying, Satan and your systems, you aren't getting away with this. I'm just allowing, I am just waiting, because I need my church to be developed through persecution and hardship. So you nominal systems are actually, you're like Babylon. You're a golden cup in the hand. You are serving a purpose. But the time is coming when you will be utterly exposed, your errors of doctrine, your errors of practice, like the St. Jude's arm going around. That's all going to be exposed as baloney, and you're not God's kingdom, and that's not the truth, and God's character will be vindicated. But to the large part, people will just react as people do when they feel they've been duped, and they will tear down the systems, in a sense, leave the systems, tear them down, in a sense, just like as during the French Revolution. But that prepares them for the incoming kingdom. So, okay, let's take some other comments, Sister Debbie.
Yeah, I just had another question. I see what you're saying, and Brother Marks. But I always had a little confusion as far as the angels. The angels, there are seven angels that have these bowls, and the bowls contain the message that is poured out on, you know, the nominal systems. But these angels have to be, are they messengers like the seven trumpet angels were people that came in their due time and gave the message? Don't these angels have to be people who pour out or make known these truths that knock down the errors? Over.
Okay, what seven people would have the privilege of doing that?
Wouldn't it be we wouldn't have known the people that had the privilege of doing that during the Reformation either. You know, so we don't know, I would assume. Over.
Okay, so some brethren present, actually very few, but some present that the seven angels are the seven messengers. I don't believe that. Personally, we spent a lot of time in chapter 15 to try to demonstrate that the 144,001 will all have the privilege of pouring the plagues, and that it is the feet members who will have the privilege of being the spokesman for the remainder who are in the spirit realm. But those in the spirit realm are the ones who will be directing the affairs to even make it possible for the feet members to give their message. We presented in chapter 14 that the six angels there were messages, that the six, that in chapter 15, the seven angels here are the messages previously given. You know, just a little point I'd like to emphasize. None of us here knew Brother Russell. We didn't meet Brother Russell, but we met his writings. And it's in his writings, in his message, that we learn the truth. And so the seven angels or seven messages, they are the messages that the angels had trumpeted. But in that is these plagues. So, okay, I'll leave it there. Brother Adam.
So I'm looking at Joshua 6:15. On the seventh day they got up daybreak and marched around the city seven times in the same manner, except on that day they circled the city seven times. So the first six times, it represents could represent the trumpets. On the seventh day, they did the same thing. So it could link the trumpets to the bowls, that the message came all at once in the seventh day. Over.
Okay. So that was a good study. So in the destruction of the city of Jericho, the priests marched around 6 days, blew the trumpet once. So that suggests the six trumpet messages going out through the gospel age. But in the seventh day, they blew their trumpet seven times and the people were to shout, and then the walls fell down and the Israelites went into the city. That would represent, as suggested, that now the same trumpets that had been sounding once a day previously on the seventh, in the seventh stage of the church, they blew seven times, but the people shouted, which would probably be the burned, bundled tares, reacting to the message of the seven last plagues, and then they shout and they rush upon the city. And that's the destruction. They become the Lord's great army, which tear down the nominal systems suggested. Okay. Thank you, Brother Adi. Brother Chris.
I was just going to bring out a small point. I did just a quick look back at, in regards to chapter 15, verse 8. The tabernacle, we read that when it was dedicated, it was filled with smoke of the glory of the Lord. And you look at 2 Kings and the dedication of the temple, and it was filled with smoke of the temple of the Lord. But here in chapter 8, it was filled with smoke from his glory, from the glory of God, and from his power. So that was added in. And as we know, the chapter 15 is the introduction to the seven last plagues. And so as the friends have been saying, and we've been going through this for weeks, the trumpets were announced over the course of 2,000 years. So it had its effect, as said, but now they're being poured out in within a year, we believe. So it's super concentrated. And that's where the power of God comes in, I think, with the introduction. It now has, it's focused, it's concentrated. And we all know if you want to get more bang for your buck, you buy the concentrated version, not the cheap dollar store version. Over.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. That's a good observation. Thank you. Before I call on Sister Debbie, Brother James, Sister Carrie, was your hand up? No. Okay. Sister Debbie.
Yeah, I guess I'm not arguing or trying to be argumentative. I'm just seeing like, when you have angels, like at the beginning of Revelations, they represent people. And now it's like changing. It seems to me like it's changing the, what a symbol is in Revelations. I mean, is that possible where you can say, in this, you know, chapter 8, these angels are messengers, people that brought messages at certain times. And then you've come to 16 and you say that these angels are the message rather than a messenger. So that's why I'm getting a little confused, because I didn't think you could change. I mean, I know we change like throughout the scriptures at different points, different things mean different. You know, same things mean different things sometimes, like wine or that. But I didn't think you could do that in Revelation. But if I'm wrong, please tell me. Thank you. Over.
All right. Well, that's reasonable. So, Sister Debbie, let me ask you, who are the six angels in the 14th chapter? We spent a number of weeks studying it. So I'll let you tell us who those six angels are in chapter 14.
Well, I always thought because they were voices that it was kind of different, because, you know, they're voicing something rather than, you know, and they're not, you know, I guess I'm confused. I'm not even going to, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, that's the argument, that each one of us has to be satisfied for ourselves. And like I say, I'm not trying to persuade anyone to our view, but I am trying to prevent our view persuasively. And so in the 14th chapter, I did not find a way that was reasonable to make this six individuals part of the six angel messengers that had previously appeared. So that in my mind, they were messages. And in the 15th chapter, I'm sticking with the thought that these are seven messages that have been trumpeted. And at the 16th chapter, the messages have the plagues which are poured out. So, and I'm emphasizing that it's the message of individuals. That the seven individuals, it's the messages that we have, and that's how we learn the truth. And so, you know, there's a point. Well, let's see. But I'm just going to leave that there for now. I'll take the hands. Brother James.
Thank you. My original comment was on the comparison of the trumpets with the bowls, but on Sister Debbie's comment too, also just that I think in agreement with you, Brother Rick, but just putting it in my own words, is that like what is, you know, what is Martin Luther without his message to the church? Certainly not. There is, you know, full of flaws and errors and just like any other human. So it's his message that makes him a person of note. Unlike spiritual angels, spiritual beings that are angels are different. So that ran through my mind. But my comment on the trumpets and the bowls is a trumpet blast, just thinking musically, has a very focused direction to its sound. So if you're off axis, you hear it, but you don't hear the clarity of it. It's if you think of microphoning a trumpet, you put the microphone right in front of the bell because that's where the sound is coming from, not to the side of it. And so if you wanted to amplify that sound, you can do two things. You can add more trumpets to it, playing the in harmony or unison. But if you wanted to go, say, to be heard behind the trumpet player, you would need to put a microphone in front of it and a speaker behind it. So it's very a directional instrument. It has great power and it can go a long ways only in one direction. The farther away you go, the sound is softer and more spread and less articulate. So, thinking of the bowls being poured, they're being poured over. So I'm thinking it's more of like a 360 degree surround sound, with the bowls compared to the trumpets that had a blast for a specific time. You know, if they were like the messages, the seven messengers were, each messenger was to a specific place, a church, but it was described as a city in the scriptures. So this being a little different with the bowls is because they're being poured over vast earthly elements. Over.
Okay, no, that's very good. And I know some of the brethren in the past like to say that these bowls were splashed out upon the recipients. As you're bringing out, it was, they're unavoidable. Whereas with the trumpet blasts, they were directional. And the further you got away, the more easy it was to ignore it or maybe not hear it, where this is definitely showing the recipients are going to receive of these plagues. Okay. Sister Marilee or Ruth?
I just wanted to comment that, like, to me, when you do a study of the word angels throughout the New Testament, it's messengers. So it could be whatever agency the Lord chooses to accomplish what he's sending forth. And I was just thinking of, like in Revelation 9:14, you've got the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, which was Luther. And then you got four angels, which were bound in the great river Euphrates that are loosed, and they go forth and they accomplish the work of that angel. And the way I understood it was that was the message of the Protestant Reformation that went forth. So you have it, like you have these different angels in the same verse, and they just represent the agencies. So anyway, over.
No, that's good, Ruth. I appreciate that. It's a very good reference. And, you know, it also makes me think of Revelation 7:1. After these things, I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth or the sea. And so it's just another example that the word angel, messenger, sometimes it is literal angel, sometimes it is human messengers, and sometimes we think it's their message or a message that is going forth. Okay, good. Thank you. Sister Carrie.
I'm looking at chapter 16 and how it repeats chapters we went through, earlier, just this morning, 8-11. And it does repeat the symbols of the, the earth, sea, rivers and springs of water, and so on. And when the Bible repeats it, I think it's harkening you back to what's already been said and saying, okay, this is the next stage of what's already been said. And therefore, it's using these previously mentioned therefore God is using these previously used messengers. And it's really hard to conceive of a way that any of those seven could say and promote a brand new message being in the, now that they're in the spirit realm. It's really logically hard to picture a fresh statement being issued from them. So it would probably be something that's already in print. Over.
Okay. All right. Good. Appreciate that. Thank you. Sister Debbie.
I just want to thank everyone for that discussion. It really helps because I'm thinking people where Ruth brings out this wider application as agencies, and that makes it more comprehensible for me. Because I'm always thinking in terms of, you know, it's fascinating because Brother Mark thinks in terms of numbers and accounting in the way, you know, and I thought that was fascinating, but I think in terms of words and semantics. So it, words mean a lot to me, you know, so I really appreciate the discussion and the help on that. Thank you. Over.
All right. Okay. Good. Very good. Yeah. Good points. Actually, we're speaking on this, on the Revelation 15, later this afternoon. So I have a certain notes that I want to bring out then, Lord willing, that I will introduce because of this discussion. I think it is relevant to what we've been talking about. And that is that when you and I look at Revelation 17:1, let's look at Revelation 17:1, and there came one of the seven angels which had the seven bowls and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot that sits upon many waters. Drop down to verse 3 just for time's sake. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-covered beast. Names of blasphemy and so on. We normally have presented that this angel, which was one of the seven which had the bowls of the last plagues. Now, you might have worded it differently. For myself, I would say it's Brother Russell's writing, particularly the second volume chapter on the man of sin. It wasn't Brother Russell that taught me and showed me the harlot. It was his writings, his message. So one of the messages which had the last plagues, Brother Russell's writings for me, and particularly that of the judgment of the harlot, was the second volume and perhaps the fourth volume. So I'm just stating that there. But there's another scripture that we can look at. It's chapter 19, Revelation 19. 19:9. And he said unto me, right blessed are they which are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he saith unto me, these are the true sayings of God. And I fell at his feet to worship him. And he said unto me, see that thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And this has regularly been pointed out to be Brother Russell. And we can understand that. However, here again, I'm going to suggest it's his writings, because it was Brother Russell's writing or his message that illustrated the work of the bride, the call of the bride. And to help illustrate this, I'm going to quote from reprint 2080. Reprint 2080. Quote, while we appreciate the love, sympathy, confidence, and fellowship of fellow servants and the entire household of faith, we want no homage, no reverence for ourselves or for our writings. Nor would we have our writings reverenced or regarded as infallible or on a par with the Holy Scriptures. End of quote. So my takeaway from that, brethren, is that it's true Brother Russell shouldn't be reverenced, and it is also true his writings should not be reverenced as equal to Scripture, nor are they to be considered infallible. So you and I have, in our own minds, complete liberty to say that this is Brother Russell himself in chapter 19 or 17, or you could say it's his message, and neither way can you be too far wrong. Sisterson.
I was thinking, all the discussion has brought me back to like what I was thinking, and I see the angels, the first seven angels, starting at Paul, ending with Brother Russell, as, I don't want to say inconsequential, but they're the ones that put the timestamp on it for me. But the focus is always on the message. So it's, they're in the bowls, they're in the trumpets. You know, it's always the message. And so when we get to the seven last messages, it's everything that they've already heard. No Trinity, no hellfire, no clergy laity, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you get it, like Chris said, it was so concentrated, then it becomes like hail, you know, that crushing 100-pound hail that just, that kills you. So that's how I'm looking at it. So I'm not really, struggling too much with the fact that it's, seven angels, but rather in my mind, I'm seeing it as, oh, okay, well, seven is heavenly completeness. That must mean that the church is complete. So it's whoever's left on the earth. As the church, they get the privilege of, you know, dumping the bowls, as it were. So that's, if I'm wrong, just let me know. Over.
Okay, no, we appreciate all that. It's, you know, the main thing, dear brethren, is that we're exposing ourselves to the scriptures, to different views. We're exposing ourselves to, what we're reading here, and, we really don't want to just, you know, feel like we need to belabor it until we're all see it eye to eye, as it were. It's fine to take it all under consideration. And as things unfold, if we're having a somewhat correct view of this, all this will come back to our minds, and we will have a better understanding as it takes place. Are suggesting that it's future. The seven last plagues means that we don't want to be overly confident. But I will say this. If someone has the seven plagues poured out in the past, they should be able to identify them. And it should be done in a way that it would fit the scriptural symbolic description in Revelation 16. And I think a number of brethren, instead of having these plagues as truths, they have it as events. A popular one is one of the plagues was World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, and several other notable events. And we don't argue that they're notable events. But somehow, everyone that lived on the earth at the time in the world was plagued by World War I, World War II, and if you're in the United States, you were plagued by the Great Depression, whether you were in or out of the nominal systems, you were affected. But more than that, we've had this great pandemic and the economic trials worldwide, and we've had now the Ukraine war break out, threatening Europe. So the brethren that have identified these as seven events, six in the past usually, Some have all seven in the past. What do you do with the pandemic and this Ukraine war? Do you now shuffle your previous events to make room for one or both of these worldwide events? If you do, what is the symbolic interpretation in chapter 16 if you make these events in the past? And then how do you shuffle them? So these are just all part of what the debate, the discussions go on. And fortunately, they're not fundamental to developing Christian character. They're not fundamental to developing a Christ-like character. How we might handle ourselves in the discussion, that might have an effect on our Christian character. So, okay. That being said, here we are. We're just about out of time, but let me ask, are there any other comments or questions on what we've discussed so far? Brother Mark?
Just real quick, I appreciated the discussion. It's helped a lot to understand from the trumpets through the plagues and the similarities and, or the strength of that message now coming out more in the plagues. It's a really good discussion. Everybody, thank you.
All right, thank you. No, that's good. And we appreciated your thought on Satan is in the process of being bound and his influences, but he's fighting all the harder. He'll be completely bound yet in the future, hopefully the near future. When the Antichrist systems fall, that'll be a good target. Brother Chris.
Yeah, I was just going to say from your last comment in discussing these things with other brethren who have different views or are trying to put it together, you know, you have like a list and it may be subtitled birth pangs of the coming kingdom and the things everybody has to deal with, whether it's worldwide or just like somewhat regional. That's way different than seven plagues that end everything and especially targeted to Christendom. So, this study has been cumulative. And that's why we keep going back earlier. If you review all your notes on the seven seals that Jesus opened, well, he's the super chief of messengers, but he's opening these seals and he gives us a glimpse of the gospel age and what's coming along. And they are related to the trumpets and who they affect. And the trumpets are more focused to the nominal systems. But encouraging to the believers, the followers of Jesus and the embryo church. And so we have to keep all that in mind. Otherwise, you get too narrowly focused on just one chapter. You can't just leave all that stuff in the dust. It's, you got to bring it along with you to understand these things. So it's a lot. And as you say, you're being exposed and exposed, and the whole point of being exposed to something is that ultimately you're exposed to all of it, so it's in your mind and you make the connection so that when you look at it again, it's not like, oh, chapter 17 has nothing to do with chapter 16 or what's so it's a challenge, and we see it almost week after week. Over.
No, very true. Thank you, Brother Chris. Good comments. Accumulative and exposure. Big, good words to grasp the overall concept of how the revelation unfolds. And that's why we've had all these side studies along the way, which tends to slow it down indeed. However, it's much more satisfying to look at all the various verses in their symbols throughout the revelation when we come across them than to interpret it one way in one chapter and later find out that that doesn't work. All right. Sister Mary Lee, Ruth?
Well, Chris's comment brought it to mind. I guess I'm kind of underscoring one of the points he made, but that the plagues are targeted to Babylon and the doctrines of Babylon. And if it's there, the world events taking place up till now, it's like nobody seems to have gotten the point of them, that they're, I was just looking at verse 16:19 at the end. And great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. That she's got to be, her doctrines of blasphemy, not just the Catholic, but the Protestant, have to be judged for all to see. And that hasn't happened yet. Over.
Yes, very good. Very good. It reminds us how Jesus, at the concluding week of his earthly ministry, after preaching for over just about 3.5 years, he exposed the Pharisees with the 7 woes unto you. His message was powerful, but it was a time because he knew he was to die. So he gave himself exposure, but he certainly exposed their errors. And we think that's the way with the final feet numbers. Okay. Thank you. Sister Cheryl.
Well, I'm only commenting since we don't have a lot of time to really delve into chapter 16. But I had a list of what, you know, these plagues were, and I wasn't sure where I got this list from, but they seem to be in harmony of what you're bringing out. And just an example, just to reiterate that we're on the right track and fast forwarding, when the 7th is poured out in the air, we're told that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. So it's the message that Satan has been behind this the whole time. But we have these studies and we know directly the air and being shown that it's Satan. So it shows us, and I appreciate you bringing out that we do have these clues in each of the 7 that help us pinpoint. Because, you know, way back when, thinking of the plagues, I thought it would be events and terrible things happening. So I really appreciate seeing the harmony and the discussion and bringing this out. Over.
All right, very good. Now, I appreciate that. And, well, we certainly agree with your thought on the 7th plague. It's the truth that exposes that Satan and the fallen angels have been behind all these false doctrines of demons.